lie. This past week has been tough. Emotionally and physically. Do y'all ever just have one of those weeks where you're just not 100%? I kind of feel like that's where I've been. And as bad as it wasn't, wasn't as bad as one of my heroes, Mr. Anthony Bourdain. I got the news Friday, June the 8th, 2018, that he had passed away by his own hand. I wasn't ready for that. I didn't see it coming. Much like the rest of the world, I think. I had no idea. It's now Sunday, June the 10th, 2018. Just had some breakfast. Drinking some coffee, sitting here and talking to you guys. Had a fun night last night. We went over to some friend's house and played some air hockey. Had a good meal. It helped things turn around for me this week. And I'm feeling better. Still not 100%. I can't put my finger on what's made this week so tough. But I stayed up late last night when we got home. Just reading articles and posts by fans and stuff. And I still can't figure it out, you know, and it's like I told my wife, though, you know, suicide is something that there is no way to figure out. You don't know what, you know, made that person sink that low. But that's all I'm going to say about that part of this story. Because Anthony Bourdain lived. He lived a life that most of us will only dream of. And he also lived it in a way, especially in his last, I don't know, 15 years. He lived it in a way that he could share it with everybody by traveling the world. Introducing us to new foods and cultures. And I think the thing that I loved the most about him was the fact that he could interact with just about anybody. It didn't matter what political side of the fence they were on, what side of the world they were from, how different they were from him. One week he'd be hanging out with rednecks, the next week he'd be, you know, on the other side of Asia somewhere, hanging out with people that I'm sure some of them had never even seen a tall, lanky, white guy like Anthony was. And he always made them feel comfortable. And he always respected their cultures. He was an inspiration for me. Since I met my wife, she turned me on to him. I guess it's probably been about 5 years ago, back when he was still doing the No Reservation show before The Parts Unknown. And I was instantly hooked, you know. Just if I ever had a day where I couldn't find something to watch or whatever, he was my go-to. I'd always turn back to watch some old reruns. And I watched, you know, a Cook's Tour which is a very, very underrated show. I highly recommend y'all watching that if you hadn't seen it. It's on Netflix. That was his first actual show that he did. I believe it was for the Food Network. Before the Food Network was all squeaky clean like it is now. But, yeah, I've watched all his shows. And, like I said, over the last year or so, I've really gotten into reading his books. I started first, of course, with Kitchen Confidential, which is as good as advertised. Then I read Medium Raw, which I found to be more of the Anthony Bourdain that I know now, you know, that I've known from watching his shows over the last 5 years. It's a great book. And then, of course, I've got into his fiction. The Stories of Bobby Gold is a really good book. Really easy read if you don't have a lot of time to read. I highly recommend reading that. It's got short chapters, and the characters just really jump off the page. Now I'm reading Gone Bamboo. I've been reading it for the last week and a half or so. Much like my heroes that have, you know, made their name in music or on the silver screen, I think it's going to be hard for a little while to watch his shows and not think about how it ended. But I'm sure that time will change that. And I'm going to definitely continue to enjoy the art that he created, because above all else, his show was art. We all want to live a certain way. We all want to be remembered for doing positive things, I would think. And I don't think there's any doubt that he'll be remembered as a very, very positive person that just continuously brought new ideas and things to the people who followed him, watched his shows, read his books. He was a hero of mine, and he'll continue to be. It's funny, we were at a farmer's market last weekend down here in Birmingham that we go to quite a bit, Pepper Place. And Andrew Zimmerman, which of course is another big-time food guy in the vein of Anthony Bourdain. Similar style. Similar. But not as cool. And my wife said, because we saw him there filming, she said, "What would you do if that was Anthony Bourdain?" I said, "Well, I wouldn't do much. You know, I wouldn't bombard him or stalk him or anything like that. But I damn sure would have been the sweaty guy following him around all day at the damn farmer's market if that would have been Anthony Bourdain." But it wasn't. And never got to meet him. That sucks. But, you know, life is full of question marks. And this will always be one, you know. Why? Will always be asked, but there's no point in asking it, because we'll never truly know the answer. I just wanted to take some time because he deserves proper tributes through every source of media there is. And this is my outlet, this podcast. So, rest in peace, Anthony Bourdain, and thank you. Thank you for the inspiration to try new things, to get to know people that are different, to enjoy the entire world, the good, the bad, the ugly. Thank you.
About 1 minute till 12 o'clock now. All the music's on record. Melody Ranch with your good buddy Texas Bill Strength coming your way over KWEM with studios in Memphis and West Memphis. And friends, don't forget about that big show tomorrow night at Overton Park Shell. The big country jamboree. It's going to be one of the biggest ever to come to Memphis, and I know you won't want to miss seeing and hearing in person Webb Pierce and all the Wondering Boys, Red Savine, Elvis Presley will be there, Jim Wilson and his little four-year-old daughter, the boy that's got such a big hit record on Daddy You Know What, and Sonny James will be there too, Bud Deckelman, Johnny Cash, Wanda Jackson, the little gal from Oklahoma, and of course yours truly and just many, many others. Don't you miss it now, tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, one show only at the Overton Park Shell. And I think I'm safe in saying, rain or shine, the show will go on tomorrow night.
If you love somebody enough, you'll follow wherever they go. That's how I got to Memphis. That's how I got to Memphis. If you love somebody enough, you'll go where your heart wants to go. That's how I got to Memphis. That's how I got to Memphis. I know if you've seen her, you tell me, 'cause you are my friend. I've got to find her and find out you tell me that she's not here, I'll follow the trail of her tears. That's how I got to Memphis. That's how I got to Memphis.
Let's drift over to the sunny side of things. Something a little more positive that went on this week was my discovery of the podcast Cocaine and Rhinestones, hosted by Tyler Mahan Coe, the son of legendary outlaw country singer David Allen Coe. And I'm going to try not to give you too many spoilers in my little review, I guess you would say, of this podcast, but I do want to talk a little bit about each episode, because these episodes are anywhere from an hour to 2 hours long, and he really goes in depth and does a great job just reviewing the history of country music and laying it down in a way that's almost like audio book form. Each episode's like its own little audio book, And if you're a country music fan of at all, even the episodes that I, you know, listened to that I really didn't know that much about, they were just so entertaining and so informative. Just the way that he tells the stories was really mind-blowing, to be honest with you. I've had the idea to kind of do something similar to this, you know, on certain episodes of my podcast. One of them that I can kind of compare just a little bit. And granted, mine are also filled with a lot of opinions and more of me just doing what I'm doing here today and just talking about things. But the Dean Dillon episode of my podcast where I talked about the legendary songwriter Dean Dillon. But Tyler was able to really go in depth, and you can tell that he does hours and hours of research for every episode that he records, and he also does a great job of editing and putting all this stuff together. And like I said, it's less of a podcast and more of an audio book. It's more like the Hardcore History series with Dan Carlin. If you haven't listened to that, if you're a history buff, I highly recommend you checking that out because he does a great job. And I think that's probably one of the templates that Tyler used to, you know, follow to capture history in such a great way when it comes to country music. But his first episode was on a guy that I know just a little bit about. I've never really got into his music with both feet, I guess you would say, and that's Ernest Tubb. But it was a very, very entertaining episode, and I knew from the minute that I heard it that I was hooked and I was going to be listening to every single one of these episodes. Oh, another note, these series of podcasts that Tyler did are in season form. So he released about a dozen episodes, I believe it is, altogether. And I've listened to all of them within a week. That tells you how good they are. I'm a sucker for this stuff, and it really stirred up a lot of emotions and old feelings as far as how much I love country music, you know, from beginning to end. I love hearing all the stories about Ernest Tubb talking about Roy Acuff and, you know, mentioning all the early days of the Grand Ole Opry. The Ernest Tubb episode is highly recommended if you're a fan of early George Jones, Johnny Cash, Jimmy Rogers. All those guys are in this episode, and I can't recommend it enough. The next episode was about The Pill by Loretta Lynn, and it really shed light on how female artists have been treated poorly, really, in country music from the beginning. Banning songs that, you know, I guess push buttons with older gentlemen, or basically the gentlemen who are running the radio stations and the record labels. Nobody wanted to talk about a woman being free with her sexuality, especially back in 1975. The Pill was definitely a song that it just hit a bunch of nerves. And it's weird too, because I think the birth control pill had been out and been legal since the early 60s, but this came out in 75 and it was banned by country radio. So that just goes to show you that, you know, country music's always been presented to mostly a conservative audience, and the way that Loretta's song was treated by the country music industry and the radio establishment was definitely due to the conservative values of a lot of the listeners, and nobody wanted to hear that at the time. But it's a great song if you haven't heard that. And that's a great episode. Now, the third episode of Cocaine and Rhinestones was tough to listen to. Spade Cooley was a guy who was a lot like Bob Wills, except he made his fame and fortune out in California in the 40s and 50s. And, I mean, he made a ton of money. It really sheds light on all that. And the hard part to listen to was he murdered his wife. And it's when he recommends you to skip ahead in the episode if you don't want to hear the gory details, I highly recommend you doing that. I kind of wish I wouldn't have listened to that part of the show, but nonetheless, it was still a very informative podcast. Like, I never even knew who Spade Cooley was. Apparently, he was a huge, huge deal back then, so that's another one. And then we had the fourth episode was the first Bobby Joe Gentry episode. And she had a song called Ode to Billy Joe, which everybody pretty much has heard this song. It was hugely, hugely popular and still pops up from time to time in movies and commercials and whatnot. And if you like listening to Lucinda Williams, Sheryl Crow, you know, some of these ladies who have taken this storytelling type songwriting to the next level, I highly recommend you listening to this episode, because this song and Bobby Gentry was way, way ahead of her time. She had a sound as far as her vocal style was very much like Tony Joe White. I just felt like that they really just didn't know what to do with her. And I think this episode shines a whole lot of light on that. And number five was the breaking down of Merle Haggard's Okie from Muskogee. And this is probably the most controversial episode of the whole series. Merle never shied away from saying things that was on his mind and putting it out there how he felt about, you know, politics, war, whatever. And this song was written back in 69. And released back during the, you know, Vietnam War and all that was going on. And this was basically Merle's first foot stomping type, you know, fist up type song about being patriotic and whatnot. And it was cool to hear Tyler really break this thing down and how he viewed it. And Merle apparently viewed it as satire whenever he wrote it. A lot of the stuff that he was saying in the songs, in that song rather, he didn't 100% believe in. He just thought it was kind of funny that people were calling themselves Okie, and they never went out to California. You have to listen to the whole story to get it, but just goes to show you, like, the very first line of the song was, we don't smoke marijuana in Muskogee. And I think they were smoking marijuana on the bus whenever they wrote the song. So, just kind of funny. All right, the next episode was the Shelby Singleton episode. And this was actually the part one of the Harper Valley PTA episodes. He actually did three episodes on this Harper Valley PTA thing that tied all these people together. And wow, I mean, the amount of research you would have to do to be able to cover these subjects is just it's really mind blowing. And I, like I said, I'm probably going to end up listening to these things again because they're just so well done. But he covers this old guy, Shelby S. Singleton, who was a big wig in the record business back then. And then in the second episode of that, which was actually the eighth episode of the whole thing, he covers Jeannie C. Riley. And of course, Jeannie C. Riley was just a hit maker there for a little while. And that Harper Valley PTA was definitely her biggest hit. But a lot of people don't know that she also did Fancy by that later was made famous by Reba McEntire. She was just a force to be reckoned with that song, man, the Harper Valley PTA. And the guy who wrote it is one of my favorites, and he's in episode 9, part 3 of this Harper Valley PTA deal. Tom T. Hall. I can't say enough about old Tom T. He's just a pure songwriter from every sense of the word. I mean, I had no idea until listening to this episode that later in his career he had written the song Little Bitty for Alan Jackson, which was a huge hit in the 90s, way, way, way on down the line from the Harper Valley PTA days. But Tom T. Hall, Me and Jesus, tons of songs. He's just, I love beer, which you probably hear in that commercial now with Chris Pratt for the Michelob Ultra that is on television right now. He seems like a normal guy who happens to write songs, and he tells stories through his songs as good as anybody who's ever done it, in my opinion. Episode 10 was the one that really, really got me. Buck Owens and Don Rich. I have to go back to when I was probably 13 or 14 is when I really discovered Buck Owens and Don Rich and really, really dove headfirst into the music that they created in the late 50s and early 60s. It changed the way that I looked at Dwight Yoakam's music. It changed the way that I looked at country music in general, because these guys were pretty much the trailblazers that put electric guitar into country music's mainstream and just took it to a whole nother level. I mean, the way that Buck Owens and the Buckaroos played country music, even today, I feel like is the most pure and quite possibly the best country band as a whole in the history of country music. And that's saying something. You know, I'm a big Waylon Jennings fan, and I love all that stuff that he did in the 70s. And I love Dwight Yoakam's stuff from the 80s and early 90s. But none of those guys could touch Buck and the Buckaroos. And even Merle Haggard at his best, I don't think he ever had a band that could go out and play live and play as good as Buck and the Buckaroos. And if you really want to find out how good these guys were, back when they were doing the original Buck Owens show, this was before they started, you know, recording music and then just playing the track and basically lip singing like they do on most television shows. These guys played everything from the intro music to when the guest came out there to sing. They played the backing band for them and everything. Just go on YouTube and watch the first episode of the Buck Owens show. And if you're a musician, for sure your mind will be blown at how crisp and mistake-free these live performances were when the recording equipment was not what it is today. That's another factor. But I remember, you know, being just blown away, and I had to have a Telecaster for sure after seeing Buck and Don doing their thing. And I'm proud to say that I've got a silver Telecaster now that I've owned for, it'll be 20 years in December. And the main reason I had to have one was Buck and Don. Now, the 12th episode of Cocaine and Rhinestones was one that kind of threw me for a loop, because I didn't understand how it was all going to tie in together with the season, but it ended up tying in very nicely whenever the Merle Haggard bus situation was mentioned, and I'll not spoil that for you. But Wynonna Judd, and talking about the rise and everything of the Judds in the early 80s, and a lot of stuff that I just had no idea about is in this episode, and it was so well done that It may be my favorite episode out of the whole series. I really, really enjoyed it. And, yeah, you got to check that one out. Don't think that, oh, I'm not a big Judge fan. I don't care nothing about that. Really, it really does kind of blow your mind when you hear the story of how Winona came up and rose to stardom. Episode 13 was Rusty and Doug Kershaw, the Cajun Way. These couple of Cajun brothers that I really didn't know that much about. I'd heard, you know, Doug Kershaw's fiddling on several people's albums, but those guys really left their mark on country music as well. Now, the 14th episode and the last episode of the series, other than the Q&A that he did for episode 15, episode 14 was Ralph Mooney, the famous steel guitar player who has put his stamp just as, maybe more so than anybody on country music. He brought pedal steel into country music, and he played on all those early Bakersfield albums as far as Buck Owens, Merle Haggard. And then in the 70s, he went on to join Waylon's band and really, really helped Waylon take that outlaw sound to the next level. Ralph Mooney was a character. I've had a lot of fun reading stories out of those Waylon books and any country music book, really. Any time Ralph Mooney's mentioned, it's usually a pretty good story on the way. I felt like this was the only episode that actually could have went deeper. So maybe he'll revisit Ralph Mooney a little more. I thought it was kind of one thing that he didn't mention right there at the end of Ralph's life was the album that he played on with Marty Stewart and the Fabulous Superlatives. It's fantastic work. It really goes back to, hell, I think Mooney was in his 80s at this time, and he was able to come into the studio and really capture the same energy that he had had in the 70s with Waylon and stuff. And he'd been off the road for years and years whenever they recorded this. I believe it was in 2010 or 2011. If I'm not mistaken, I believe it's the Ghost Train album, I believe, is that album by Marty Stewart. You can find it pretty easy. I believe he played on that Little Heartbreaker song, I believe, because it sounds a lot like Rainy Day Woman. And it's just phenomenal. So anyway, it has been a challenging week, but that podcast was able to really, really reconnect me with a love for country music that is deep in my bones. And Tyler's about the same age as I am. I think he's a few years younger than I am, but you can tell that he's really, really enjoyed his time, not only playing in his dad's band, but getting to know the backstories of these artists and songwriters, and even the people that were, you know, way, way behind the scenes as far as the record executives and all that stuff. I mean, the amount of research that he did for this is just, it's mind-blowing. Also, during the Buck Owens second episode, Buck Owens and Don Rich, there was a point in there that got to me so hard because I loved it so much whenever it happened. And that was him telling the story of Buck Owens coming back one more time with Dwight Yoakam and recording the Streets of Bakersfield. It was just a beautiful, beautiful story. And I just remember how affected I was as a kid when I first heard that. And it really has stuck with me this whole time. I mean, I love Dwight Yoakam's music so much, and the roots of that come from Buck Owens. And I'm forever grateful for their collaboration and their contributions to country music. And I just wanted to take the time to really give Tyler some love for this podcast that he just nailed, man. I've been doing a podcast now for over 3 years, and a lot of them are hit or miss, and mine are more of a conversational type of deal, but I gotta just take my hat off for him to be able to research and produce this and edit this all by himself. And he obviously did things right, because now he has free reign to go to the Country Music Hall of Fame's archives and use them anytime he wants. So if that doesn't tell you that he really, really nailed this and is getting a ton of great press for it, nothing will. I mean, he just, it's an amazing, amazing podcast. If you want to know the history of country music, you have to check it out. Well, anyway, this has been OJP for June 10th, 2018. Thank you for listening. The Hillbilly Luchador Podcast. And feel free to check out joshporter08.com for any more of my music. joshporter08 on YouTube for all of my covers and original songs that I've recorded over the years. I've been doing YouTube for over 10 years now, and it's been a great way to get to play music and share my podcast and thoughts with everybody out there. So I appreciate all y'all listening, and we'll catch you next week. I'm going to try to get back in the groove of doing these things regular, you know, on the regular. So, peace out. Ain't no love, it ain't in a pity.
Well, folks, it's just about time for us to leave. But before we go, I'd like to say that it's been very nice coming your way today over KWEM. We hope very much that you enjoyed our program and hope you'll be tuned in again next Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock. And once again, we'll be back with you and try to sing you the songs that you want to hear. If you have any requests, just write us in. If we know it, we'll sing it. If we don't, we'll...